An Ash Wednesday sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 25, 2004, entitled This Quiet Dust, in the series A Little Fair Legacy. The texts for the sermon are Ecclesiastes 3 and 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16 through chapter 5, verse 5. And a reading from Duncan Littlefair, included here. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
And these words coming from over a half century ago from Duncan Littlefair. We were not created whole in this earth, placed within a garden of perfection from which, at the summit of our achievement, newly born by God, we sinned and fell away, and the garden became a jungle of weeds. We have come up out of the earth, out of the stuff of the earth, out of the sand and the mud and the water we were created. We grew through the creative power of God, emerging from the jungle and the chaos of a world under the directing hand of God, until we rose from the water, emerged from the jungle, escaped from the limits of the animal world and became limitless, almost infinite creatures, able to understand the glory of the God that had created the world over the thousands upon thousands of millions of years of history. The God that I talk to you about is a discoverable entity within, identity within the earth. There is no myth, no imaginative creation, no God existing beyond that we do not know. This God belongs here. He is of the world and in the world. I am related to God, and I am related to all the creatures of the earth and to my brothers and sisters, all people of the earth. Is not God the Father of all of us and of all creation? And are we not brothers and sisters? I was trying to figure out when it was that I first received the ashes on my forehead with those somber words, dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. I don't know how many years ago it was, a good number of years ago now, but it happened here. It had never been a part of my tradition growing up in the Reformed Church, which is liturgically challenged. I would rather have thought about it as some hocus-pocus Catholic sacramental act with which I would have no truck, being a good evangelical and Reformed minister. And then I experienced it one day, experienced the momentous impact of that honest moment. Dust thou art, to dust thou shalt return. A moment of honesty in a world of superficiality. I don't know, perhaps it is that I have moved into the latter decades of my own life that I appreciate it so much. I've come to value it and to treasure it as a pastoral moment as well. A moment of absolute honesty as I look into your eyes and place the ashes on your head and say, dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. And we acknowledge the reality of our humanity and our mortality. It's a beautiful moment. This service is an oasis. It's a sanctuary. It's a quiet place away from a world that is so bombastic with its media blitzes, its constant barrage of commercials, its excessive celebrations of Super Bowl and All-Star extravaganzas, of Emmys and Golden Globes and Oscars, with all of the superficiality of those so-called celebrations that mark our society. How different is a moment like this? I don't know whether Dr. Littlefair would enjoy this service or not. He never attended an Ash Wednesday service. And he had pretty much done away with the sacramental and the ritualistic in the worshiping community at Fountain Street. And yet, he loved to sit out there, and even on the high holy days when we got out all of the pageantry and all of the symbolism of the tradition, I know how much he enjoyed that. And we used to speak about the fact that he was fascinated that we could have translated the understanding of the faith while maintaining those accoutrements that have been a part of the tradition down through the centuries. So I don't know whether he would like this service or not, but I do think he would affirm the honesty and the reality of the moment of our facing each other in the face of our mutual mortality. I think you probably know that in preparation for the memorial service while I was in Florida, there were those who very kindly sent me some pieces that were important to Duncan. Joan Earle, his secretary, his friend, his caregiver of over 50 years, sent me some of his favorite poems. And when I read this Quiet Dust, which is printed on the cover of your liturgy, I knew that I would be speaking about that this evening, having that be the center of our reflection, although at that time I had not yet thought in terms of a series of messages on a Littlefair legacy. But I knew tonight we'd be centered around this Quiet Dust. It was Duncan's favorite poem, because it expressed so eloquently his faith and his understanding. Before I knew Duncan, I knew of him only by reputation, which of course in Western Michigan was not good. An enemy of the faith, to be sure, one who denied and betrayed the great Christian tradition. I suppose that non-Fountain Street folks got exposed to Duncan most often at funerals, where there was a kind of obligatory attendance, and therefore the necessity of being submitted to whatever it was that came forth from that pulpit, that infamous pulpit. And I do remember, on occasion, people who attended funerals at Fountain Street who would come away saying that it was awful. There was no comfort. There was no word of hope. And I didn't know any better until I came to know Duncan and to know him intimately and to come to understand the nature of his religious faith and experience and expression. And then, of course, I came to understand quite a different picture than that which had been rumored about. I got a call this afternoon from an old and very dear friend of mine, John Richard DeWitt. We were classmates together in college and seminary, And he called me from South Carolina, where he's now serving as a pastor. But he had been in Grand Rapids for a few years at the Seventh Reformed Church. The irony was that Dick and I were just the best of friends, loving each other, and in constant contact and communion over all these many years. He was anchoring the most conservative Reformed church in the nation, and I was anchoring the most liberal. When he came to Grand Rapids, Duncan's dear old friend Lester DeCoster joined the Seventh Reformed Church, which created quite a stir because he is a person of no mean estate in the Christian Reformed Church. And then he brought Duncan to the Seventh Reformed Church to hear Dick preach, because Dick is one of the great preachers in the nation. And Duncan loved to hear him preach. The people of Seventh Reformed Church were so thrilled that there was Duncan Littlefair in worship, and they began to pray for his soul. Fortunately, he didn't get saved. But Lester and Duncan, who had lunch over all those many years, invited my friend Dick to the table at Duba's. And then Dick invited me. And that was the original quartet in the corner of Duba's bar. Dick, a conservative, reformed, erudite scholar, and a gentleman. Lester, a dear crotchety Calvinist of unbending will. Duncan, off the charts. And when I first came to the table, he said, "Now tell me who you are." I said, "Well, I was where Dick still is." And so this was the table. Well, I'm telling you this simply because today, unannounced, Dick called from Carolina. And of course, we talked about Duncan. And I told him how I concluded the memorial message, saying that I wanted to share a secret with you, that Duncan was a man who lived in constant God consciousness, that he was a man drunk with God. And my friend Dick said, "You're right." Now that's quite remarkable, isn't it, when you think about it? Quite amazing, really. Two people raised in a very conservative tradition, one remaining there faithful to that tradition, one having traversed the whole spectrum to quite another position, but nonetheless, both of us bearing witness to the God consciousness of Duncan Littlefair. But if you were here on Sunday, you perhaps got at least a hint of the nature of that God consciousness as Duncan experienced it. It was a God consciousness that was experienced within the one reality of which we were a part. I defined a liberal as one who recognized that the sciences were laying bare the mysteries of the natural world. And the liberal religious scholar was one who finally gave up trying to find knowledge of the world in the Bible, gave up this authoritative text in terms of the knowledge of reality, of nature, of the universe, and instead listened to what the scientists had to say about the nature of this reality, and then sought to find the way to live religiously within that reality. And that reality, which was laid bare, was a miracle. Full of mystery, full of wonder. The reality of which we are a part fills one with awe. And no one lived with a greater sense of the wonder and the awe of the miracle of life than Duncan Littlefair. But as I said on Sunday, if you were a particular kind of a liberal, a Chicago school liberal, a modernist, then you didn't look for God in some other realm. You didn't posit a dualism, a realm of nature and a realm of spirit, a realm of the natural and a realm of the supernatural, but you experienced or you looked for the mystery, the creative center of reality within the structures of nature itself. And that was the core and the key to the religious experience of Duncan Littlefair, that eloquent spokesman of that Chicago school, that found the richness of life as the location of the mystery of God, that creative center of things, that creative ground of things, that unfolding miracle which we are all living together. It was that that created wonder and awe and caused one to live with growing awareness and appreciation and consequently with reverence and with gratitude. When I read This Quiet Dust, well, it was like Duncan had written it himself. Here in my curving hands I cup this quiet dust. I lift it up. Here is the mother of all thought. Of this the shining heavens are wrought, the laughing lips, the feet that rove, the face, the body that you love. Mere dust, no more, yet nothing less. And this has suffered consciousness. This dust I hold in my cupped hand, this has suffered consciousness, passion, and terror. This again shall suffer passion, death, and pain. For as all flesh must die, so all now dust shall live. 'Tis natural, yet hardly do I understand. Here in the hollow of my hand, a bit of God himself I keep between two vigils fallen asleep. And I read that and I said, wow, is that not a magnificent and profound expression of a religious naturalism that understands the unitary nature of reality, this cosmic process of which we are the unfolding part, the emerging wonder, this 13.7 billion year process in which that dust, that matter, that material has emerged into life and into conscious life, suffering consciousness, pain and terror and death. This dust, reflective, of course, of that creation story as the Creator scoops a handful of the dust of the earth to create the creature. And reflective too of maybe that most profound insight of the Christian tradition, that eternal word or intention of God becoming flesh, God becoming human. No one has ever seen God. The one who dwells in love dwells in God, and God in that one. This quiet dust with the potential of the divine in the human. Wow. That's amazing. The writer of Ecclesiastes was a thinker, a poet, a skeptic, sometimes almost a cynic. It's really interesting that Hebrew writing made the cut to the canon. As I read, he's talking about the fact that animal breath and human breath is the same. An insight way beyond his time of the unitary structure of reality. And then raising the question, you know, even his recognition of the animal nature of the human and the continuity between the animal and the human, and then wondering what happens to that breath or spirit, because in Hebrew it's the same word, ruach. What happens to that ruach? Who knows, he says. Does the spirit of the human go upward and the spirit of a mere animal go downward to the earth? Didn't know. The Christian tradition, of course, centered on a resurrection. Paul speaks about something more. He talks about this earthly tabernacle being dissolved. There again, dust thou art, to dust thou shalt return. But of course, with his encounter with that visionary experience he has of the risen Christ, he speaks of being clothed upon. Well, he doesn't know what he's talking about either. But he's wondering. And of course we wonder, don't we? Duncan loved this quiet dust because it spoke so eloquently of the unitary nature of reality that emanated in the miracle of life, which was to be savored, tasted, lived fully, celebrated, to the miracle, wonder, glory, and joy of life. And then is that enough? I think we who have been so conditioned by a very traditional Christian understanding speak about something more, and when we face death with one another, the cliches trip off our tongues rather lightly. Cliches about which I think we don't often think deeply. And I'm not here this evening to tell you about your own hope of something more, or confidence in something more, or to be honest with you, perhaps your journey has been somewhat like mine, where to the extent that I have come to an awareness of the miracle of life and the living of that in all of its wonder, more and more wondering myself if this isn't enough. I really don't know. No one knows. This quiet dust, now between two vigils, dust thou art and to dust thou shalt return. But will that dust return again to life and the miracle of it all? You see, we We wonder about things beyond our knowledge very naturally. Duncan perhaps could have lived a while yet, but he bargained with his doctor to let him go home. And his daughter told me when I called from Florida that when they took him out of the ambulance on the gurney and brought him into his home, he had the most serene smile on his face. He was home. But he was home because he was always home. Dear God, what a gift is life. This life. I think a year ago, perhaps, was it an All Saints Day or something, my sermon subject was, the secret of dying well is living well. Duncan lived so well. He died so well. And when I see that, then simply for me, it's enough.